listening to Shelf Esteem, the podcast where I talk to interesting people about books they find interesting. Coming up this month, I've got a book swap with Julia Mayo, who is library technician at the A.C. Hunter Public Library and an avid reader and a real reader friend of mine, someone whose book recommendations I always listen to. And we decided to swap a couple of mystery novels. I guess one is definitely a mystery novel, the other, I don't know if you call it a murder mystery, but a murder definitely takes place. So we recommended these two books to each other. You're going to hear all about them. We're going to discuss them a little bit, and then we get into talking a little bit about mysteries and book recommendations generally. There is a little bit where we do get into some spoilers about the two books, but we will very clearly mark that in the conversation so you'll know when to stop listening if you don't want to get any spoilers. So I think we're just going to start right into my conversation with Julia. Julia, tell me a little bit about the book that you recommended to me.
So the book I recommended to you was Murder Your Employer by Rupert Holmes.
Great title.
I know. And I often had it open when my boss would walk by. I don't know if that intimidated
what kind
or
of reaction, any
her.
Reaction yeah, no. You get?
Like a little head tilt and then kind of like a smirk and walks away. But that book came across the desk at the circulation desk. I had never seen it, but one of the staff downstairs grabbed it and brought it upstairs. Julia, this is a Julia book, right?
Oh, yeah.
So when I first started reading it, what I really, really liked about it was the pace. Mm. Like, it's really quick, and the language is very kind of, it's clever. It's very clever in its language, and it's very quick in its pace. Mm-hmm. And so I can totally, like, it, the language of the book was like how I think. Mm-hmm. So it was like really super easy for me to, I read it in like one day.
Uh-huh.
I sat down and just read
I think when I read it pretty quickly too. It was a fairly fast read.
It was
read.
So good. And it kind of put me in mind a little bit of an adult Harry Potter book.
Oh, I can see that. Yeah, because you're kind of discovering this sort of hidden place and hidden world that you that you didn't know about.
And you go to a school.
Yeah,
and they teach you stuff.
Yeah.
And it was really good. And I like the fact that all the stories, though not interconnected, they connected them all.
Yeah. Right? So this is probably a good time for we won't get spoilery now. We'll get spoilery maybe later, but we'll give people a warning. But just like give people who are listening kind of a thumbnail of how you would describe what this book is about.
So Murder Your Employer starts off, a young man is working for like an aircraft fabrication place, and they're creating aircrafts, and he has a design for an aircraft. And he and his friend or coworker are working on it. And his boss takes the design and makes some adjustments.
Mm.
And the adjustments are not safe.
Mm-hmm.
And he finds out later that these adjustments have been made to save money. And he objects to it. And so, and said, well, you know, I'm not going to let you put this out and have people's lives in danger. So the boss, instead of listening to him, he kind of makes this person a scapegoat. Him and his coworker become scapegoats. And I can't remember, is it money that's missing or something that's like some really shady sort of something happens, and they blame it all on him and his coworker. And his coworker ends up killing himself, and he loses his girlfriend, and it's like everything goes downhill, and he loses his job, and it's just really terrible. And so he stews over this for quite a while, and he realizes the only way that anything will ever be right again is if he kills his boss.
Right. Yeah.
And so he comes up with an idea to come and kill his boss, and he has it all planned out, which in a way that he thinks is really good.
Uh-huh.
And he's going to push his boss off the platform at the train station. He's going to be run over by a train. It's going to be look like an accident. No problem. Well, he pushes his boss and he takes off running, and he goes home. And like 2 minutes later, these two guys show up at his, at his house. And like, he's like, oh my God, the police have already found me.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, this is me. If I had ever done something like that, I'm automatically, like, I can't get away with anything.
Yes.
It's all over my face.
Oh,
I
absolutely related to him at that point, because I would not be able to pull off any kind of a murder,
no,
for sure.
I could pull off a murder, but I wouldn't, like, if you thought it was me and you come and ask me questions,
you
I would
absolutely cave. Yeah, I would too. Yeah.
But, yeah, no, and it through the jigs and reels, he finds out that he is being nominated to go to a school to teach you how to kill your employer. Mm. They don't call it killing. They call it deletion.
Right.
They delete them. Mm-hmm. And these are people in the world who have, it's been determined that the world will be a better place without them in it. And so they're going to delete them.
Yeah. So it's like a secret murder training school, but only to get rid of people who, like you said, deserve the world would be better. Yeah. People deserve to die. Yeah.
Yeah. Deserve to be bumped off.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's, I found it really entertaining. I found, you know, even the like graphic parts weren't overly graphic.
Yeah, no, it's not gory or overly graphic.
No, but like I said, it's the language and the quickness and the cleverness of it that I really liked. I like the whole twist of the whole plot and how, you know, okay, you're not a really good murderer, but we're going to make you one.
Yeah.
We're going to give you the skills to, you know, accomplish your dirty
deed. To do what you want to do. Yeah, because he doesn't succeed in murdering his boss in that first attempt, but they're like, we're going to train you to do this properly.
Yeah, we see potential in you.
Yeah, it's so rare in a murder mystery, which this, I guess, essentially is, although it kind of isn't too, but to come up with any kind of really fresh and original concept.
Yes, exactly.
And I thought that was really neat. Yeah.
So there's another book called, I think it's The Seven Deaths of Evelyn Hugo.
Oh, I have read that one, but a long time now. Now, there's The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo.
No, and this then is, there's The Seven Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle.
Yes, that's it. You have confusingly similar
names. And they both
names.
Came out around the same time.
And I have read both of them, but the one with the deaths I read a long time ago, and I don't remember it that well. But
it kind of put me in mind of that, because that, too, is a whole different twist on a murder mystery.
Yes, yeah.
In that one, the main character wakes up every day in a new body.
Right,
so
yes.
He is reliving the same day from a different point of view, and he's trying to figure out who exactly is the murderer.
Right, yeah.
By inhabiting these different people's personas.
Yes, that's right. That one is a really fresh concept, too.
I thought that was,
too.
Wow, this is so cool. I love it when they, like, take stuff and they twist it around and make it fresh and new.
Yes, yeah.
I do like the regular old Miss Marple.
Classic murder mystery.
You know, there is a time and place, but every once in a while, you know, a nice, fresh view that gets your brain really totally, like, shakes your brain up a little bit.
Yeah.
Really,
well,
like
that's
that.
One of the things I was going to ask you is, are you a pretty big mystery reader? Like, is that one of your favorite genres?
It is the thing.
Yeah.
It's my jam right there. Yeah. Mystery and historical fiction. I like a good, that's why I like you. a good, well-researched historical fiction that you come out the other side. Not only have you enjoyed a really good story, but you've learned something.
Right. Yeah.
Right? And, so I like books that are, like, the setting is real, the time frame is real, and it makes you want to go and learn more about that particular
time frame
or whatever, you know.
Yeah, and of course there's a lot of crossover with that, because there are a lot of great historical mysteries as well. Yeah. Well, I also, of course, read Murder, Your Employer on your recommendation. I really enjoyed it, too.
Yay.
I will say it picked up for me in the second half. The first part, when they were actually at the murder training school, and some of the intrigue, like, amongst the students and staff at the school, wasn't as engaging to me. But I guess without getting into spoiler territory yet, I should say that it's a pretty clear break then about halfway through the novel when this main character, I think Cliff is his name?
I believe so.
And then two other characters that we're following, two women. They're sort of the three key characters.
One of them
characters.
Is an actress.
Yes.
And the other one is, like, a secretary administrative person.
Yes.
And the administrative person is really...
She's being blackmailed.
She's being blackmailed and bullied by her boss.
Yeah.
And then the actress is being kind of blackmailed, blackballed.
Kind of, yeah, blackballed. Kind of sidelined from her career and being told you're not... Because she doesn't sleep with the producer.
Yeah, she didn't
want to...
She didn't sleep with the producer.
So he's not going to give her any more roles.
You don't get any more roles.
And this is... You mentioned time period. This is sort of mid-20th century.
Yeah,
kind
but
of,
it never actually says.
It never does, no. But certainly, particularly the actress story, it has a lot of that sort of old Hollywood feel.
Yes,
you know,
and I love,
like,
that time frame, too. Like the 30s, 40s, 50s.
Yeah.
I love that. I love Great Britain particularly, but I love old Hollywood.
Yes.
And it's just like the clothes were so beautiful and the cars were so cool. And,
So for me, that book really picked up midway through when these three characters are out of the school and they're sent back to their lives to actually get away with committing the murder that they want to do.
Yeah.
And then the whole second half of pretty much of the novel is each of them setting up, committing the murder, and then are they going to get away with it? And to exactly. me, that was what I found really interesting with that novel, was that the real suspense was, it's not a whodunit. You already know whodunit and why.
Exactly.
It's, are they going to manage to, yeah, to go through with it and then get away with it? And so it really upends a lot of the conventions of the typical murder mystery. Yeah.
Usually you start off with, you know, the crime's been committed. You are provided with all the clues, and then you have to follow it along. Usually you're following along with the detective and you're mm-hmm. figuring it all yeah. out. And this is like, okay, it's been committed and they've done it in this really imaginative way.
Oh, extremely. Like, I think all three of them are murders that are like way more convoluted than anybody would ever carry out in real life. Gosh.
And
yeah.
if they can't get away with it, like if somebody can figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
More power to them. Yeah, go find them. Go get them.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, I really enjoyed it, particularly once they got into the murders. That's when it got suspenseful for me, and I got really interested. I was kind of invested in these three characters, and were they going to follow through with their plan? And then were they themselves going to be able to, you know, get out of the situation? Because they're all situations where, you know, they themselves could be, you know, in danger as well while they're trying to commit this murder or to get away from it. So that was the part that was really interesting for me, was the second part with the three actual murders.
I found the like other world kind of atmosphere of the school. I found that not necessarily intriguing, but quite entertaining.
Yeah. And it is really, kind of a Harry Potter for grown-ups kind of feel. Yeah, with for that. Sure. There's this whole secret world that you never knew existed, and all of these things are here, and you're learning all these, you know, skills that you never even imagined.
I can't remember all of them, but I remember the names of the classes were really funny.
Yeah.
They were very, and like I said, very clever.
Yes, very clever writing. Yeah. 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 And there's a lot of that. So after reading that book, I wanted to think of one to recommend to you. That, you know, when we do this kind of book swap thing, when I do it with guests, I'm usually trying to think of books that are different, but have some sort of point of commonality. And the book I thought of immediately was The Paying Guests by Sarah Waters, which is not typically a mystery, but does contain a murder.
Yes.
And the thing that's, and it, I've since reread the book, but at the time I recommended it to you, it had been several years since I'd read it. And what stands out to me is that, like Murder Your Employer, it is a murder where your sympathies are on the side of the people who
have committed
it, and you're hoping that they're going to, you know, sort of going to get away with it. And it's, yeah, and there's no mystery about, like, who done it did it happen, because the reader is right there when it happens.
Oh, absolutely. And like, you're carried along with the story. Like, you're right in the room with them as things happen.
As it's happening,
which I really found her writing was really good like that. It really drew you in.
Mm-hmm.
And you felt like you were experiencing it along with the characters. But, you know, sometimes when you're reading a book, you feel like you're, like, a fly on the wall.
Yeah.
And it makes you feel uncomfortable.
yeah.
But this was like, you were right there along with them, like pace for pace, and right along through the story. It was really, really well written.
Yeah.
I'd never read any of her stuff before.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No,
She's a favorite of mine. I guess Sarah Waters is kind of famous for two things, really good detailed historical stories, and also usually centering lesbian love stories. So she kind of writes about women loving women in a time period when you don't necessarily think about that.
You don't think that was ever a thing.
That, like, never went on. Like, but of
that's
course
a,
it did.
Like,
yeah.
That's a new thing. Yeah. That's never happened. No.
Yeah, no, we didn't invent gay people in the late 20th century. And that's kind of what her writing delves into. But then she also, like, I think that's the only one of hers that I can think of off the top of my head that has murder. But then there's another one that is very much a ghost story.
Right.
And you're wondering all the way through, is this going to be the kind of thing where there's a logical explanation for it, or is it really a supernatural thing? So she really plays around with genre. Genres a lot, which, you know, while always using the historical setting too. So with this one, I guess to give a quick plot recap, it is the main character is a woman named Frances who lives with her widowed mother, and it is early 1920s, just after World War I. Both her brothers have been killed in the war, and then the father has since died, and they've basically discovered that the father was not a great provider, left behind a lot of debts.
He was not a very good financial wizard.
So Frances and her mother, who are these sort of, you know, genteel upper middle class ladies, are left with the problem of how to survive. and they decide to rent out rooms in their house. And I always find people who write about class distinctions are really interesting to me. Right. Like, it hadn't even occurred to me, you know, not just the difference in class between Frances and her mother and then the people who end up renting from them, this couple, Lillian and Leonard, but also how it's such a come down for Frances to be doing the housework instead of being able to afford to hire a maid to do the housework. Exactly. Yeah.
And that was like one of the first things that her mother asked.
Yeah.
After they got the lodgers, oh, well, now can we afford a servant?
Yes, yeah, because it's to kind of get like, back up to our place in society.
Yeah, because, you know, it was always, her mother was always so concerned with appearances and how things looked from the outside and what people thought and what they were saying, what the neighbors,
Yes, yeah.
And I was like, oh, my God, you know, you probably can't afford to buy food.
Exactly.
You know, I'm sorry. And I think back about it, you know, my mother was very, not exactly like that, but she was very it was very important to her that, you know, we didn't grow up with very much at all. And but it was very important to her that we went to school, you know, well, not well dressed, but clean and tidy.
Yes.
And,
yeah.
You know, when we spoke, we it was, you know, we were articulate and we had a good vocabulary and we were well read. You know, to her, you know, we might not have very much money, but it doesn't take money to be smart.
Yeah. And I think of a lot of that in my own mother, too, who didn't grow up very well off herself. And I think was always really concerned about respectability putting on a good appearance and looking, you know, and it wasn't just superficial or just surface, but there definitely was that concern of what will people think if you go out looking like this or if you do this in public, what will the neighbors think?
No, my mother was not concerned about the neighbors.
Oh, that's
good. She was really concerned about, she didn't want us to look ignorant. And where we grew up, you know, in Tennessee, in Appalachian Mountains, like a lot of people, you hear a Southern accent and it's like really, really exaggerated. And that, it's not far from the truth. I mean, people I grew up with were very much like that. But my mother would, oh my gosh, she would kill you if you talk like that.
Same thing around here, of course, with Newfoundland accents. You didn't want to sound, you know, too much like you have, you know, you're dropping your H's and that kind of thing.
Oh, absolutely.
It's very much about respectability and class.
And class,
you know, being the right kind of person. So, you know, in the novel, Frances's mother is very much that kind of person, very concerned about keeping their place in society and being seen to. And so she hates to see Frances doing the housework, even though she knows she has to, and because there's no other way they can get by financially.
Right.
So they have this young couple who are of a slightly lower social class than themselves, Lillian and Leonard, young married couple, rent their rented rooms. And as they're there for a while, Frances and Lillian develop first a friendship and then a romance. And Lillian is not very happy in her marriage to Leonard. And then through a series of events, which again, we'll give a spoiler warning
later,
but Leonard dies and things really spiral out of control from there, I think is probably the best way to put it without getting too spoilery. You
know, they, I found I really related to her mother. I really related to Frances. I found she was a very relatable character. She was written in a real way, like a real person. I could totally feel some, like I could feel her grief when she would talk about her brothers being killed in the war. And, you know, I could feel her frustration with her mother when, you know, she felt so caged in and like she had no other option. You know, this is it. This is what I have to do.
And she really does feel, she feels very trapped in her life. And you can kind of see that, you know, this post-World War I generation of women who during the war had gotten to do things and have a little more freedom than was normally allowed to women. And, you know, Frances has had a girlfriend in the past, a woman with whom she had a relationship, and they were going to live together and get a little flat together and have a life together. And then with the death of her brothers and her father, she's like, oh, I have to stay with my mother.
I have to go do this.
Yeah, right. I have to look after her. And so she really is someone who feels like she's really, you know, she's trapped. I guess both Frances and Lillian, because Lillian's feeling very trapped in this marriage that she's in too.
Yeah.
I found Lillian a frustrating character.
I just wanted to smack Lillian several times throughout the book because I found her like, she was a bit, what a flibbertigibbet.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
And I think because Frances was so mature, like when I was first started reading it, I was thinking Frances was in her mid-30s.
But she's not. She's in her 20s as well. Exactly. She's just a little older than Lillian. But I think she is a more mature person, and she's had the life experience that's made her more mature.
And I think and the losses that she's had in her life and the sacrifices that she's had to make have created this maturity in her that Lillian really lacks.
Yeah, Lillian is very immature and very, I think, short-sighted. She you know, she lives in the moment. And this is probably a good time, because I don't think we can go any further down that road with this book, and I want to come back to the other book as well in talking about the murders themselves. So this is probably a good time to say...
Spoilers.
If either of these books sound intriguing to you and you hate to have endings ruined, then maybe you can stop the podcast here and go, you know, I think I will check out one or both of these books from the library and, or, you know, pick up a copy and read them. And then maybe you can come back and listen to the rest of the podcast.
I listened to Sarah Waters' book on Audible.
Oh, and was it a good audio book?
It was very good. And I tend to listen quick.
I bump up the speed?
I always speed it up. Uh-huh. And, you know, not Alvin and the Chipmunks speed, no, but it was, it was like more clippy.
Yeah.
And I found it really, really entertaining.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. I'm really, and this is a little diversion from the spoilers about the murder mysteries, but I really have a thing of only listening to nonfiction on audiobooks. So I listen to a lot of audiobooks, but only nonfiction. And I still read fiction mostly as like ebooks or paper books, because I think what the thing is, when I'm listening to audiobooks, I'm always listening to an audiobook while I'm doing something else. And it's typically walking the dog, driving the car, or doing the dishes are my three big times for audiobooks and podcasts. And sometimes my mind wanders. And if it was something like a murder mystery, I'd be like, oh, I've missed a crucial piece of the plot and I have to go back and
missed
rewind.
A part of the
yeah. I missed whodunit. So
I
yeah.
missed a clue.
But I would imagine that Sarah Waters' book would make a really good good audiobook listen.
I listened to it because I threw my back out last week. Oh. So I was off work all week. Uh-huh. And so that's what I did. I re-listened to the book.
Well, there you go. Yeah. I reread it because I actually, when we were originally going to record this a couple of weeks ago, I was like, I'm just going to pick it up and just remind myself of the names of the characters and a few key plot points. And then I ended up just rereading the whole thing. So that was kind of nice. But yeah, we've given our spoiler warning, so you understand that everything after this is spoilers. So yeah, there's some spoilery things I want to talk about with the paying guests. And then I want to come back to murder your employer and talk about those murders. But with the paying guests, you know, what happens is... there's a confrontation between Frances, Lillian, and Leonard. And Leonard and Frances are physically struggling. He's like, he's going to choke her. He's really angry at her. And Lillian whacks him over the head with a big, heavy metal ashtray. And they think they've knocked him out, but they've actually killed him. And the part where I was kind of frustrated with Lillian before this, but Lillian's first impulse is... we don't call the police. We don't call a doctor. We try to cover this up.
Yes.
And that's such a dumb idea.
Oh, I know. Because, I mean, if they had just gone to the police at the very beginning, like when this all happened, and said, you know, he was hurting my friend Frances.
Yeah.
And I was trying to get him off of her, and I whacked him in the head. I accidentally killed him. 99% of the time, they would have said, oh my gosh, okay, of course it's self-defense.
Yeah, it's self-defense or it's accidental death or whatever. I think one thing that I often have to remember when reading older novels is that at that time period, of course, the death penalty for murder was, you know, not only still legal, but quite common. So I guess there is this very real fear that you could hang for this. But under the circumstances, yeah, if they'd reported it right away, I don't think there's any, you know, fear that they would have gotten, you know, a life sentence or a death sentence because, you know, it's so obviously self-defense. And, you know, Frances has like the marks of his fingers around her throat, I think, and everything.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they could have brought up the fact that he was abusive towards Lillian.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, they didn't. It didn't have to go that way.
Yeah. And Lillian, that's where I really am frustrated with Lillian because, you know, this clumsy attempt to, we're going to drag the body out of the house, out to the garden and try to make it look like somebody attacked him on the street. And then his body, we're just going to, you know, pretend to find it there in the morning. And so they do this incredibly clumsy cover up job, which is not that convincing.
And Lillian is no help at all because she's just taking pills to abort a child.
Yes, that's the other thing. She's bringing on a miscarriage, a home abortion, while all this is going on, which is the initial cause for the argument when Leonard comes in and eventually realizes what they're doing. And she's no help. It's all left to Frances, who was the one who wanted to call the police in the first place.
Yes.
She has to cover up the murder. The other thing is,
it's hard being the sensible person.
It is so hard being the sensible person, but she's not sensible enough to override Lillian and say, no, we're not going to cover this up. She goes along with it, even though she feels it's a terrible thing to do.
And it's because she loves Lillian so much and she doesn't want to lose her.
The other thing that just cracks me up about this book, I mean, it's such a serious book. It's not funny. The other one, Murder Your Employer, is often quite
funny.
I think the Paying Guest is never intentionally funny. It's a little wry and satirical sometimes. But the thing that's so funny to me is how easy it was to get away with murder in 1922 or whatever
it was.
It's like,
the police were idiots.
Yeah, they're entertaining the police. You know, the police do come and question, obviously. And the police are standing on the rug, which has Leonard's blood all over it that they've just scrubbed out.
And Lillian's little sister grabs the murder weapon from behind the couch, puts it in the middle of the rug, and dances around it in front of the police. And, you know, poor Frances is about ready to have an apoplexy, and they're just, oh, we'll have a good day, and off they go.
I was reading that,
and I was like, my heart was in my throat, I'm thinking, you know, oh my God, they're gonna see it, never occurred to them, because the detective immediately figured it was a man.
Yes, yeah, of course.
There's no way a woman could have done this.
Yeah, there's the assumption that and they don't do any real investigation of the crime scene. Of course, there's no, like, you know, DNA evidence or anything.
They did find hair on his body or on his clothes, but it was Frances, Lillian, Charlie's?
Yeah, there was some other person. Yeah. And then they later
find out an unknown person.
And Leonard, they later find out, was having an affair. So it kind of, you know, that gets, the other girl gets implicated a little bit too.
Yeah, because she had a boyfriend. Yes. And apparently her boyfriend had assaulted him previously.
Yeah, and that's who the crime ends up getting pinned on. And that's where, to me, the book gets the most suspenseful because, you know, Frances is happy to get away with murder,
but she doesn't want somebody to take the rap for something.
Exactly. And when she sits in court every day and watches this young man, who is not a nice guy or a good guy in any way, but at the same time, he's going to hang for something that she did.
He was a bit of an idiot, too, because he, you know, was all this kind of bluff and bluster kind of guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, sitting there with a smirk on his face. And I'm like, oh, yeah, how to win friends and influence the jury.
Exactly.
I'm going to sit here and look like I'm guilty.
Yeah.
And Frances was like, oh, please don't find him guilty. Please don't find him guilty, because he didn't really do it.
Yeah. And then she feels she'll have to confess. And eventually, I think, convinces Lillian that they'll both have to confess to what happened if the jury finds this guy guilty. But yeah, the real suspense in the whole second half of that book, about halfway through that this happens, is, are Frances and Lillian going to get away with it? Then when somebody is arrested, is he going to get charged for
it?
And how can this possibly get resolved when Frances is such a good person that there's no way she's going to see an innocent man hanged for something that she did? So it was so suspenseful for me. And it was so interesting to me that we know who committed the murder.
Yes.
We know how it was done. We know all the details, but there's still so much suspense.
And like, you're sitting there screaming at the book, what is wrong with you? You know, I love books like that where you just get so invested in it that you, you know, flick it across the room because it makes you really mad, or you know, like, slam it shut and don't talk to it for a day because you're like so fed up with you. Oh my gosh. But I didn't feel that strongly about Lillian. I did want to smack her upside the head a couple times, but like, there are characters that you read where they just, you just want to throttle them.
Yes.
Or you're like, oh my God, what is wrong with you? But I love books like that because you become so enthralled with the story. You just, like, you become immersed in it.
Yeah.
So, like, you have this really, you become invested in it, and you want to be able to, you know, you want the good guys to win, and you want the love to conquer all, and you want, you know, I don't know about you, but I like a happy ending.
I do like a happy ending. And this was a book where it's very, I don't even know if I would say it has a happy ending, but it has a sort of satisfying, or at least a hopeful ending. But it was really hard to pull it off. Like, I was so no way this has to end tragically. I was really worried.
I was anticipating, anticipating that, you know, he was going to be found not guilty, and or that he was going to be found guilty, and then Francis was going to confess.
Confess, yeah. Which
now,
is
Francis would have never implicated Lillian.
No.
You know, and that's what I had kind of figured in my head, was mm-hmm. that Francis would end up confessing and going to jail.
And taking the rap, fall for Lillian. Which is not quite how it ends, but but I think what made me think of this book immediately after I always want to call it How to Murder Your Employer.
I do too. But it is just I call it that all the time. It's just Murder Your Employer.
But the
handbook.
All the tropes of the murder mystery are based on the idea that the murderer is usually the victim is usually someone who doesn't deserve to die. The murderer is the bad person who got rid of them. Mm-hmm. And the detective is the good guy who's trying to bring justice and bring exactly. this terrible person to justice. And, you know, both of these books really upset and overturned that trope. Leonard is not a particularly nice guy, and I felt no sorrow about seeing him killed.
He's kind of like the Dixie Chicks.
Earl had to die. Yeah. Leonard is definitely the Earl of this book, and they do even just, you know, have to drag his body
away. I got to say, it's at one point, I realized how unhappy he was in the marriage himself.
That's
right?
True. Yeah.
And so he was unhappy. She was unhappy. And you know, people do stupid stuff.
Yeah.
And I feel there was
probably a lot more spousal murder in the days before there was easily obtainable divorce. Cause yes. I think there were people who were like, well, there's no other way out of this situation. So,
well, you know, there's a lot of, like there's one book, I think it's called The Poisoner's Handbook. And it's a nonfiction book,
mm-hmm.
and it's all about, or it's in the inheritance powder or something like that. Anyway, it's about using arsenic mm-hmm. and how, like in Victorian times, how it was so easily accessible and people could, you know, bump off people. And like it was a long time before they realized, like they figured out tests in order to test to see if people had been poisoned by arsenic.
Yeah.
So, you know, people got away with a lot of stuff.
People did get away with a lot of murder in the good old days. And I think, you know, Murder Your Employer, because it is a little more of a lighthearted, you know, maybe a little less intensely realistic, I think the bad guys, the guys who are killed or attempted to be killed, are really almost larger than life, almost cartoonish villains.
Oh,
like you
absolutely.
Really want these people, these three employers bumped off.
Well, the young girl who was the administrative assistant who was being blackmailed and bullied, her boss, oh my gosh, what an unpleasant woman.
Such a horrible person.
Horrible person. And, you know, the director who wanted the actress to sleep with him. And,
yeah.
Like,
I mean, he's a real Harvey Weinstein figure. Like, you want to see that guy get
absolutely.
His, you know.
Yeah, you're like, oh my gosh, please, let me do it. I'll do it. Yeah.
And the murder she plans for him is not just murder, but also murdering him in sort of the most humiliating way possible.
Exactly. Yeah. So that when his body is found, yeah, it's like splashed all over the newspapers and like a lot of the badness that he had perpetrated all comes out.
Yes. She really gets her revenge with that one. And then the really main character, Cliff, you know, who's going back to the aerospace company and wanting to kill the terrible boss who really deserves it. That one is so like, I was really the twists and turns of that murder that he has planned. It's so convoluted and it's so complicated, but it basically is setting it up to look like the other guy committed suicide, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, because his friend actually committed suicide because he was so ashamed of what, like his life was over, like his reputation was gone, and you know, and he just couldn't, and so his wife was left. At the end, and Cliff went to visit with her.
Right.
And,
yeah.
I love the fact that he, you know, it wasn't all about him. He was trying to do this for other people too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So with all of those, like, it's really easy to root for the murderer in all three of those because the victim is such an obviously terrible person.
Kind of like watching Dexter.
Yeah, now I've never seen Dexter, but I know that's kind of the premise that he gets rid of people who deserve to die, right?
Yes, exactly. He's a serial killer of terrible people.
And that's kind of the premise with Murder Your Employer, except that there's a whole secret school to teach people how to do it
get away with it.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's not only just doing it, but it's getting away with it too.
Yeah.
And if you are not successful in deleting your subject, you will be deleted.
Yeah, so there's real incentive to get it right.
It's not just you're going to get an F on your grade card. It's like there's a whole lot going on there.
Yeah. And I often struggle with, like, I do enjoy a murder mystery too. I don't think it's like my number one favorite genre to read, but I do read a fair number of mysteries. And I do sometimes struggle with the whole, kind of getting entertainment out of something that would be horrific if it happened in real life.
Exactly, yeah.
And of course, that's the whole thing with the whole true crime genre too, that you're looking at things that did happen in real life and getting entertainment out of it. And I can see how that's kind of, people
there's
have
a lot
of...
There's a historian named Lucy Worsley.
Yes, I love Lucy Worsley. Yeah, she's great.
I love her. So she wrote a book called The Very British Murderer. I think that's the name of it. I might have the title incorrect.
Well, it's okay. We always put a little thing. I always put a little thing at the end where I say that any books that we've talked about during the podcast, I'm going to put up in the show notes the titles and authors.
Because sometimes
we have trouble remembering the titles.
It's the end of my work day. I can hardly remember my last name.
I think it is something like A Very British Murder, Lucy Worsley.
So she goes through the whole concept of murder as entertainment and how, like, the whole conception of murder mysteries and how people are totally enthralled by true crime.
Right.
And so one of the murders that she talks about is one of the first, like, real big murders in England. And it was a family. A man, his wife, his child, and I believe their servant were killed. And this is like in the late 1700s.
Mm-hmm.
And so somebody comes in and bashes them all in the head and kills the little baby. It's just horrific.
Mm-hmm.
But what really struck me was that their house was left open.
Mm-hmm.
People were allowed to come through and check it out.
Oh, yeah.
And their bodies were So instead of taking the bodies to the morgue, they left the bodies there that people could see them in situ.
Wow.
So that they would, and so the public became invested in helping solve this crime, right? So the coroner's, the coroner's court would come together, and like everyday people would come together and determine whether a death had been a murder or accidental or whatever.
Right.
So there was no... investigating. It was really odd.
Yeah.
Like I was like, what? And so people would be allowed to traipse through, like hundreds of people would walk through and they would like it was some sort of tourist thing.
Wow.
And I was like, whoa, that is harsh.
It is.
I couldn't believe it. But yeah, no, it's really, her books are really easy to read. And that's one of the things that I like about, I never used to read a lot of nonfiction until I started working in the reference library, where I work now. And I find that in the last 10, 15 years, nonfiction has become more readable.
Mm.
It's not dry and factual.
There's a lot of great nonfiction writers who do such a good job of taking a topic that you might not even think would be interesting and telling it in such an interesting way.
I read a book called London Fog, A Biography.
Oh, really?
It's the biography of London Fog and the concept of London Fog and how the fog in London has almost a personality of its own.
Right.
What a great book. I found it really entertaining. But who would have thought?
Yeah.
Who would have thought?
Yeah, and that's what I love too in a nonfiction book is somebody taking a topic and me thinking, I didn't think I was interested in this, but then when I read this person writing about it, I realized this is actually fascinating.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I could totally see Lucy Worsley doing that with murder.
Oh, she does that one. She did an amazing biography of Jane Austen.
Mm-hmm. Did she do one about Agatha Christie too?
She did.
I would like to read that.
It was really good. Agatha Christie's like three of my favorite. I just love her.
Uh-huh.
And like one of the books that I read was The Mystery of Mrs. Christie. Mm-hmm. And it was a fictional recounting of Agatha Christie's disappearance for 11 days.
Yeah.
So she disappeared for 11 days and it all comes out in the book and a lot of the book is true, but some of it is supposition because nobody really knows. And, she went to her grave without saying exactly why she disappeared. I mean, a lot of people can suppose that, they know why she disappeared. It's because her husband was having an affair with a younger woman and he was going to leave her and all this other stuff. And she just lost her poop and decided that she's going to, go take a vacation. And she went to a spa and lost some weight. And she was actually checked in at the spa under the name of his mistress.
Mm.
So I thought that was really kind of cool.
That is really kind of cool.
I'm like, you get it, Agatha.
I'm reading, speaking, now that we've gotten on to Agatha Christie, where this is always going to end up at some point. You might remember that sometime in the last few months, you posted a picture on social media of one of the Tommy and Tuppence mysteries Agatha Christie. So did you read that after? Have you read it yet?
I did. It was really good. Now, I found it's really difficult sometimes once you get into the language of it, right? And there's a lot of language. Like, it's, you got to put it in its place. You got to realize that it was written in, like, the
1920s. Yeah, yeah.
And the language and the way it reads is different. But once you get into the rhythm of it, really, really good.
I have actually read all of those now. I'm on the last one of the Tommy and Tuppence mysteries. And I think the first three are fantastic. The fourth one is not bad. But what fascinates me about them is she started writing about this young pair of detectives who become a couple and get married in the 1920s when the characters are young and, you know, and it's, you know, early in the century. And then she sort of came back and revisited them every decade. So they're like middle-aged people solving.
Their kids have grown up.
Yeah, their kids have grown up in World War II. And then the one I'm reading now, which a lot of people call Agatha Christie's worst novel. But I mean, the poor woman.
That?
It's Postern of Fate. It's the last Tommy and Tuppence novel, which was written, I think, 3 years before she died.
Now, that's the one I read.
Okay.
Yeah, so
well, the
I didn't realize
are all better. Their others are all better.
I didn't realize. Who was it give it to? Somebody gave it to me for Christmas.
Okay.
It was my friend Christina gave it to me for Christmas. So I was reading it. I really liked it. And I know the whole concept of Tommy and Tuppence from watching the television series.
Yes, yeah.
But I didn't think that was bad at all.
It's probably in comparison to the others. Like, it's just very rambly, and you can kind of see
it is,
she was kind of losing her memory a little bit at that point, and the characters keep talking about forgetting things and losing their memory and being forgetful. And someone was saying, like, you can really see how much that was on her mind, how as you age, you know, you're dealing with that. I can't say, I haven't finished yet, so I can't say how tight the mystery is, but I've heard people say it's not particularly.
No.
But the first
three,
especially the wartime, the World War II one, NRM, which is really more of a
mystery spy kind
of a spy thing. That's really good. I really love that.
Now, I haven't read the book, but I've seen the series.
Yes, and I haven't seen the series, but I've read the book. So
there has been a new rendition of Murder is Easy.
Yes, I did see that. We watched that.
Wasn't it good?
Yeah,
I thought it was really good. It got a lot of critical, like, people were very critical of it.
Yeah, people.
And people, like, they get a certain picture in their head of something being a certain way.
Yeah.
And when it's not like that, they get all crooked. I like the idea that she took it, or whoever took it, and twisted it around and made it different.
Yes.
I thought that was very, like I said, very clever.
Yeah, I think
and
it's
I
interesting
like things
to
being
do something
fresh
and different with it. Yeah. The other relatively recent adaptation of a Agatha Christie book that I've watched recently is Why Didn't They Ask Evans?
Yes.
Which I love that. I thought that was really cute.
And the young person that was that the one that had the young person in that was in Harry Potter played?
it could have been.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Can't remember now who all that.
That's a game that my husband and I play. We watch movies and we spend most of our time going, I bet you don't remember what movie they were in. And we play it. My husband is a fiend. He is absolutely a fiend with that. And he's so good. And sometimes it'll take, I have to, give me a hint. No, I'm not giving you a hint. And we don't even actually watch the movie. We just watch
it. Now, we do that too, but we play the game very differently because I'm so bad at recognizing people that I almost suffer from face blindness. Like, even in real life, if I see somebody out of context, I often have trouble placing them. And in a, with an actor, if they show up in a movie with like a different haircut, different hair color, different clothes, different style, I don't recognize them at all. So we went, you know, when we go to see a movie and we're like, oh, that was a star-studded cast, and Jason will go to the, well, that was so-and-so, that was so-and-so, that was so-and-so. And I'm like, until their names came up on the screen at the end, I had no idea. They could have been like, and sometimes I'll be like, I vaguely recognize that person. And sometimes I'm like, one movie we watched Argyle recently in the theaters.
Oh, is it good?
It's a lot of fun.
I
wouldn't
like
say
stuff.
It's good in the sense of being super well made, but it's a lot of fun.
So that's
really
the one that has Henry Cavill?
Yep, Henry Cavill
and
in it.
And the author has created these.
Yes,
this character.
Created the character, yeah.
Yes.
And features very prominently Sam Rockwell, who I would say is one of my favorite actors. And all through the movie, I was like, that guy is so familiar, and I really like the way he looks. I'm sure I know
who
he is.
You had to wait till he started dancing.
Yeah, I literally had to wait till his name came up at the end. I was like, oh, yeah, Sam Rockwell. I like that guy. But I'm so bad at recognizing actors, so, and Jason's so good at it.
And my husband is really good at it, too, and he's relentless when it comes to – he will not give me a clue. And so, like – He loves to watch me suffer, I think.
See, I'll just sit there and IMDb it while we're watching. If it's on TV, I'm sorry. I'm just going to look up who's in this and see what I've seen.
Oh, no, we're not allowed. We're not allowed. That's against the rules of the game.
You stick to the rules. Yeah. But there have been some great adaptations made lately of some of the Agatha Christie novels, and it's really nice to see. Yeah, I like seeing fresh spins on them and people putting
exactly.
a new take on
yeah.
them. Go ahead.
It's like... have you watched the Bridgerton series? Have you been caught up in that yet?
I have not. No, I'm familiar.
Oh,
like, I'm
gosh,
peripherally
people,
aware of it, but I haven't
people
watched
are
it.
Mad about this show. It's absolutely crazy. And it's like this fluffy romance written by, I think it's Julia Quinn.
Yeah.
And the books are very fluffy, and they all follow a family of alphabetically named children.
Yes, yeah.
And, but people, like, when it first came out, there were... I love the fact that they put different ethnicities.
Yes, yeah.
And it
yeah.
wasn't a completely white cast.
Yeah, and you're like, oh, like, that's not realistic. I'm like, there's a lot of things about this that's not realistic.
But,
you know, it's fiction.
And, but they were, you know, they embraced the not realistic
yes,
part.
Yeah.
And like the clothing is not.
Yeah, it's not
perfect,
a period appropriate.
Period.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. And but it's beautiful. Like
yeah.
And I'm like, just can't people just be entertained? Why are you gonna pick
yeah.
holes in everything?
Now that we're talking about television adaptations, especially of mysteries, have you ever read the Shard Lake Mysteries?
No.
By C.J. Sansom? So I'm not sure when I'm going to post this, but C.J. Sansom, the writer, literally died today. Like,
oh.
just came out. He was only 71, but he'd had cancer for several years. But he wrote this great series of historical mysteries set in Tudor England called the Shard Lake Chronicles. About this character, his main character, Matthew Shardlake, is a lawyer. He's a hunchback, so he's kind of considered a bit of an outcast in society.
Oh, cool.
And he's sent by Thomas Cromwell to oversee the dissolution of one of the monasteries, but then it turns out there's sinister things happening at the monastery.
Cool.
And it's just gotten made into a TV series. It's actually, the first episode is airing within the next couple of days. So that'll be in the past by the time you're listening to this, but beginning of May. And the author just passed away today.
Oh, that's a sin.
Yeah, it really is. But it's, I've loved those books so much. And that's, you know, if you like historical mysteries, that's one worth checking out for really evoking that
time period.
There's
another historical mystery that I always liked. It was the, by C.S. Harris, I think.
Okay. I haven't heard those.
And it's the, gosh, it's about a guy who is like he's like a CSI detective before CSI detectives were ever even a thing, so it's like the 1700s.
Uh-huh.
And gosh, I have to find the name of it, but it was really good. Like, one of them is like why the angels cry and
okay.
hear the, like, it's always like a three-word title.
Right. Well, I will look up the name
really
of those
good.
And we'll put them in the show notes.
Excellent.
For the episode, so
but
people
yeah,
can check them.
Yeah, it's
out,
also really good
out.
Like, it's a whole series of in him finding clues and solving mysteries within Edwardian, or not Edwardian, but probably Tudor England.
Okay, yeah. Well, I'm sure we could keep throwing mystery recommendations at each other and at the listeners all night, but I really want to thank you for coming and doing this.
Thank you for
having
me.
I want to thank you for recommending that I read Murder Your Employer.
A handbook.
Yes. And you know, again, don't take it too seriously. Don't go out and actually murder your employer, but I think
unless they really deserve it.
Well,
okay, just
but I do think both that and The Paying Guest by Sarah Waters both really turn a lot of the tropes of mystery writing kind of on their head.
I really like the fresh take of the you know, Sarah Waters, her language was like top. I just really loved the speed and the language. And I loved her character. I really became invested, and I felt really connected to her character.
Mm-hmm.
And you,
me too,
you know,
yeah.
You really want a character, either one that you want to choke, or one that you're like rooting for,
really
you,
rooting
like really
for,
wanted
yeah.
to see or have a happy ending.
Yeah. And I definitely felt that. And the same thing in Murder Your Employer. You know, I was so stressed for all three of these people. And like, how can they possibly pull a happy ending out of this? And I think it's safe to say that maybe two of them get a happy ending and one doesn't, or not a fully happy ending.
Yeah, maybe not a fully happy ending, but it kind of leaves you a little bit guessing.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
And I like that too. Like, you know, you're not exactly sure what's going to happen with one of them. And, you know, one of them comes back to the school and becomes an instructor.
Yes, yeah.
And so, yeah, it's really kind of like neatly tied up.
It is.
So I got to throw out one more title before
Absolutely.
I go. It's, oh my God, The Sunset Years of Agnes Sharp.
Ooh, I haven't heard of that one at all.
I cannot remember the title or cannot remember the author, but it is about a little old late, like people living in a retirement home.
Oh, yeah.
And one of their people that are in their retirement home is killed, mm-hmm. and one of their neighbors is killed, and they're trying to figure out what happened. And because they have, you know, they have tinnitus, and they have, you know, arthritis, and one of them can't see, and the other one's on a wheelchair, and, you know, the stairway lift is broken, and all this other stuff. One of them's going deaf, and they're trying to find the clues to figure out what happened to their friend. It is so good. It's translated from German.
Oh, interesting.
It's really, really good.
I will have to check that
out. Again, it came across the circulation desk, and one of my friends on the second floor sent it up on the cart on the elevator and said, "Julie, you got to read this one. It looks like a totally you book." And yeah,
and it was.
Little old people read, you know.
And that, now that you've said retirement home, right. I have to ask if you've read the Thursday Murder Club books.
I love Richard Osman. He's so great.
And that's also going to be made into
a series
soon. Yes. They just released the casting for it.
I know. Is it Emma Thompson?
I know it's Helen Mirren as Elizabeth, the former,
yes,
the retired
yes,
spy.
Right.
And the funniest casting, I think, is Pierce Brosnan as Ron, the former labor leader. And, you know,
tough
guy. And people were saying, Brosnan is Ron? Isn't he too handsome? And the comment I loved online was, Pierce Brosnan is who would play Ron if Ron was doing the casting. That's how he looks in his
yes.
own head.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So I'm really looking forward to that series because I have loved all of those books.
I love
too.
Them too. And again, a quick, clever take on a murder mystery.
Yes, yeah. And again, most of the people who get bumped off there, you don't
kinda
regret them too much.
It.
They deserve it, and that's good.
Well, the first book, the first person who gets bumped off, I cannot tell you how happy I was when they were bumped off. Because as soon as I read the description of this person, like when them interacting with somebody at a coffee shop or whatever, I was like, what a wanker. I hope he gets knocked off first off.
And ta-da,
there you go.
That was a surprise. Well, thank you so much for coming on, talking about the two books that we started with and a whole bunch of other mysteries.
Yeah.
It has been a pleasure having you here.
Thank you so much. I'll see you at the library soon.
Absolutely. And that wraps up my conversation with Julia Mayo about the books Murder Your Employer by Rupert Holmes and The Paying Guests by Sarah Waters, as well as a lot of other mystery novels and mystery TV series that we ended up talking about. If you're interested in any of the things that we discussed in this episode, even if we couldn't quite remember the title or the author's name, if you go to my website, trudymorgancole.com, there is a link there for the podcast Shelf Esteem. And if you click on that, it'll take you to the show notes where you can see a list of all the books and the TV series that we talked about, and then we'll have all the authors' names and titles correct for that. I hope you've enjoyed this conversation as much as Julia and I did. We had a great time talking about these two books and lots of others. Maybe you'll be interested to check one of these out, and I will be back again next month with another episode. Until then, read a good book and build your shelf esteem.